up with great skill from him. Doing the most alarm! Raheem Sterling! What a finish! What pure class from the Englishman!
Premier Talk, the English Premier League podcast for the fans.
Hello and welcome back to the Premier Talk podcast. I'm one of your two hosts, Andrew Mello, and with me as always is my boy Danny B, Daniel Barbudo. How's it going, bro?
Andrew, it's a great day. Loving life currently. Classes, midterms, the greatest season of them all. Excited to discuss a little bit about the Premier League as always this week.
Daniel, I'm wearing my Benfica kit today. We're recording on the Wednesday. We dropped the episodes on the Thursday. So Benfica's playing today. We're going to see the outcome later. They're playing against Bayern Munich, but no task is too big for SL Benfica. So
I'm calling 12-0 Bayern, but it's
fine. I'm confident in the boys today. I'm confident, Daniel.
I'm saying they blow them out like Barca.
Daniel.
It's going to be an ugly one.
Barca's going to catch an L today. Kiev's going to slap them around. Anyways, starting lineup. Daniel, kick us off.
Starting us off with our match day 8 recap.
We got the games of the week.
3 games to discuss. And we got a little sticky Steve Bruce situation.
Daniel, match day 8 recap. There's a lot of action this week. A lot of goals this week.
Lots of goals.
First one, Saturday, October the 16th. Daniel, kick us off with the Watford-Liverpool fixture there.
Liverpool came out 5-0 in this one. A massive game from their strike force. You'd love to see this if you're a Liverpool fan. You got 3 goals from Firmino, 1 goal from Salah. It's what you want on your strike force. I believe even Mane got on the scoreboard as well. Was it their front 3 that all got goals? I believe so. And Salah, goal and assist. He continues to show why he's being one of the best in the world right now. Firmino getting on the goal sheet with a hattie. You'd love to see this if you're a Liverpool fan. The second game on Saturday, October 16th, we got Southampton versus Leeds. Southampton came out 1-0 in this one. I don't think either of us called this from last week. Southampton coming out on top.
I said Leeds, but yeah,
I think I had a draw in this one. But yeah, Southampton, you know, massive 3 points for them. They got to move themselves up in the table, especially if they want to come back to the form that they were in last year. The third game on Saturday, Norwich versus Brighton. This was a 0-0 draw. Not much to discuss here. Both teams aren't. Brighton's doing decent this year. You know, they've dropped points their last couple of fixtures. They tied against Norwich, which you don't want to be happening considering Norwich is sitting in dead last. Not what you want to see if you're Brighton. Wolves and Aston Villa. This was a massive game for Wolves. Aston Villa came out 2-0. Looked like I had predicted last week that Emi Martinez was going to get the clean sheet. But Wolves, in the last like 12 minutes, they scored 3 goals.
Hey, I called the Wolves dub, so.
It was a great comeback win from Wolves. Moving on to which is going to be one of our games of the week, Leicester versus Manchester United. Again, another disappointing loss for Manchester United. disappointing. That's literally the only word that you can say. Leicester comes out on top of this one, 4-2. A goal fest here. Moving on to Manchester City versus Burnley. Manchester City comes out on top 2-0 in this one. Manchester City didn't know what they needed to do. They needed to pick up the 3 points against a lower tier Burnley side, and that's exactly what they did. Our second game of the week here is Chelsea versus Brentford. Chelsea came out 1-0 in this one with Edouard Mendy putting on an absolute masterclass. Going to get into further detail very soon in this episode. That was all the games for Saturday, October 16th. On Sunday, October 17th, there was only 2 games. We got Everton versus West Ham, where West Ham came on top 1-0, and Newcastle versus Tottenham, our third and final game of the week, where Tottenham came out on top against his Newcastle side, currently sitting in 19th, 3-2. The last game of match day 8 was on Monday, October 18th, and it was Arsenal versus Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace looked like they were going to take this one 2-1, but Lacazette, super sub, came on and scored in with one of the last kicks of the game. It was, again, a great game to watch.
Daniel, Arsenal, man. They're so lucky.
They're lucky.
I tuned into that game. Man, I was rooting for Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace had an amazing goal. Where Gallagher, the Chelsea man, is on loan there. He dribbled the ball forward, took his space, and then they shifted the ball over from the left side of the pitch over to the right side of the pitch, where the ball stumbled upon Edward's feet, and it was just a lovely finish, bar down, no chance for Ramsdale, just a lovely work goal. They were really in it, and then right at the end, Lacazette, you know, he got a little cheesy goal there. So they saved the point for Arsenal, and Patrick Vieira, he was managing against his former side, his former club side, and he was just pissed and disappointed that Lacazette was able to draw an equalizer.
I do have to give it to Lacazette, though, because he came on, and I can't lie to you, he did play pretty well. He was very energetic. He looked like, I think his role was just to get the crowd involved, because they weren't involved at all. And that's exactly what he did. He came out, scored the goal, gave Arsenal the 1 point in a game that they probably deserved to lose.
Daniel, games of the week. We're going to just kick it off with my team, the Blues. They took on Brentford, the Brentford Bees. There's a London derby here. Daniel, Brentford have been impressive. You said Brentford were going to take this one. They didn't. Mm-hmm. But they came not. Very close to it, though. I'll give you credit for that. The team was very solid, very well organized, hard for Chelsea to break down. And the only way Chelsea found a goal was through Ben Chilwell, and it was an unusual goal scorer for Chelsea. He's not the one that's bagging goals every week, obviously, because he's a fullback. But he got the start. He came on, and it was just the ball was bouncing. He found himself at the top of the 18, and he just side foot volleyed it top ends, and it was a brilliant, brilliant goal. It was the only goal in this one. But the storyline of this game, Daniel, was the Senegalese international goalkeeper Edouard Mendy. What a signing he's been over the last 8 months. Obviously, fantastic in the UCL campaign last year. But in this game in particular, Daniel, 6 saves. And they're all spectacular. Very good saves. Very well positioned. You know, Mendy's not the best goalie in terms of his technical ability with his feet and ball distribution. That's one of his weaker sides to his game. But Daniel, his shot-saving ability, his shot-stopping ability, whatever you want to call it, he is just fantastic, one of the world's best, very poised, very good positioning, and he's huge. He's able to find himself sprawling for balls that typically most keepers wouldn't get to. So just a top performance, and he's the man of the match because he saved the 3 points for Chelsea. He kept them in the game. So top performance. Yep,
I completely agree. I think it was a masterclass, like I had already said. He played so well in this game. And I know there's one interview that I saw was of Kalidou Koulibaly, the center back on Napoli. And he believed that his Senegalese teammate should be included in the 30-man Ballon d'Or shortlist. And he couldn't understand why he wasn't, because he's been phenomenal. He kind of led this Chelsea team to Champions League final. They ended up winning Champions League final. Proved to be a fantastic signing for the Chelsea squad. And I don't know, Andrew, what do you think? Do you think he deserves to be on the 30-man shortlist for the Ballon d'Or? I know there's a lot of players who had fantastic years who weren't included in this. And as a goalie, it's even more difficult for you to get onto this 30-man shortlist. But how do you feel? What do you think he should have been a part of?
Yeah, I know. What I feel about the shortlist is that there's 30 guys on a list, and their names are in contention for the Ballon d'Or. But some of them, you know, never really deserve to be in the conversation to actually win the trophy. They're just there because there is a 30-man shortlist. And I think that it is nice to see your name considered on that list. I do think that's something cool. But is Edouard Mendy ever going to win the Ballon d'Or? No, he's not. It's going to be the guys that score goals up front. And, you know, if you're a center half, you're a fullback, and you have a tremendous campaign and you're winning titles and whatnot, or if you're a goalkeeper and you make astonishing saves and keep your team in it, That's all great, but at the end of the day, the Ballon d'Or is going to be given to, unfortunately, to a guy that's obviously either a midfield player or an attacking player that has an impact every single game, and that's scoring the goals, and that's a face of a club, right? That's obviously why we have the Yashin Trophy, to give it to the best keeper. Mm-hmm. And if Mendy wasn't on the shortlist for Yashin Keeper, or Yashin Trophy, pardon me, then I would be concerned because he's a terrific goalkeeper, right? So, you know, that doesn't really bother me if he wasn't on that list. It's just a different award for a different category of player.
Mm-hmm. We're going to move on here to our second game of the week, Leicester City versus Manchester United. A very disappointing loss again for this Manchester United team that has a very difficult schedule ahead in the next like 8 to 12 games. They're playing topside teams, Champions League games, difficult schedule, and starting us off in this difficult schedule, they go to Leicester City, who's not doing too well this year. They're lower than everyone thought that they would be, and they come out and lose this Leicester side 4-2. Starting us off, opening the scoring, Greenwood with an absolute screamer.
That was a banger, bro. Holy.
It was a phenomenal goal. He cut it onto his strong foot, his left foot, and he ripped it, curving away from Kasper Schmeichel, and just a phenomenal goal. Then Tielemans equalized with just as good as of a goal, to be completely honest with you. 12 minutes later, outside the box. It was kind of like a dink finesse shot.
It was like an awkward shot. It was an awkward... He had his body turned. He was off balance, but he still found a way to, like, get the ball up and curl it over.
It was a finish. It was a lovely finish. And then, so it went into halftime, 1-1. Everyone thinks, okay, maybe you're going to see one goal, maybe two goals left in this game.
Mm-hmm.
With 13 minutes left to go in the game, between the 78th minute and the 91st minute, there were four goals scored, which was absolute mad. The teams were just going back and forth. It started off with Soyuncu off a corner, ball bobbled around, fell right at his feet, just on the, like, 2 feet back of the goal line. De Gea was on the other side of the net, tap in for Soyuncu. 4 minutes later in the game, Rashford received a pass from Lindelof, which was an absolutely phenomenal pass. Not that Lindelof played good all game, because he didn't. Our defense was absolutely shocking. Lindelof with a phenomenal pass to Rashford, who just came on, first game back from surgery in the offseason.
And a fresh trim. You always have a fresh trim.
And he equalized, tie the game 2-2. Everyone's like, okay, United's back. We're going to at least pick up a point. Maybe we go for three. A minute later, 12 seconds after kickoff, Vardy scored a half volley that went in to put Leicester up 3-2. At this point, they had just subbed in Patson Daka. It was the man. Who did they acquire him from? I can't seem to remember.
Salzburg.
Off the top of my head. Salzburg. There you go. Of Salzburg. And he came in, still hadn't scored a goal for Leicester City. And he scores, of course, his first goal for Leicester City against Manchester United in the 91st minute. And that was a cherry on top for Leicester, defeating Manchester United 4-2.
Daniel, 11 shots on target from Leicester to Man United 6. That's an interesting stat line there. Daniel, the problem with this United team, and I'll say it and I'll say it time and time again, it's depth. It's depth, Daniel. Mm-hmm. Their star man at the back, it's Varane, and he's out with injury, unfortunately, for Manchester United. And he makes a big difference. You know, I used to love Lindelof. In his Benfica days, he was terrific center half there. Really came and found himself there at the club. And then he obviously made the big money move to Man United and hasn't panned out. It's the lack of depth for this United team that's going to kill them. Because you see teams like City, you see teams like Liverpool, they have depth. They have depth. They can rotate guys in and they'll be more than okay. The problem with this United team is if a guy like Varane's out, imagine Cristiano would be out. Imagine a guy like Bruno would be out for some time. They're screwed, Daniel. They don't have no one to pick up the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just so poor defensively. If you look on three out of four of these goals, the Vardy goal could have been contested better. He was alone inside the 18, should have been contested better. The Patson Daka goal, back post, there's three United defenders just I don't know what they're doing. Same thing with Soyuncu's goal. Soyuncu, easy tap in back post. I saw Luke Shaw standing there. I saw Maguire standing there. I can't remember the third player, but there's another player surrounding him. And they're just standing there, Daniel. They're ball watching. This is you know, the simplest of defending principles that every player needs to learn when they're a young footballer. And Daniel, they can't do it at the top level. They switch off. They don't know what they're doing. It looks like they don't know what they're doing, clearly. And it's easy goals that are being put in the back of the net. They're not well-worked team goals. Mm-hmm. They're sloppy, crappy goals that you hate to concede. And as a United fan, I would be livid just at the fact that there's like a lack of passion from this team right now. And just poor, simple mistakes that you're making that are costing you, Daniel. It's garbage. It's garbage football from United right now.
The biggest mistake came off the first goal for me. It was like just Maguire. He gets a pass coming to him. He sees, I believe it was Vardy running at him full speed, and he decides not to go to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's soccer 101 or football 101. You're receiving a pass, go to the ball. He decides not to, and Vardy's a pretty rapid player.
Mm-hmm.
Vardy gets the ball first, passes it on to Tielemans. Tielemans strikes it, which was a phenomenal strike. I got to give it to Tielemans. But just like, if you're Harry Maguire, you know you're not the fastest of center backs, okay? And you know a striker that is running at you has a decent amount of pace. Go to the ball, play it back to De Gea, and that goal doesn't happen. It's as simple as that. He decided not to. I can't, like, I don't think Maguire was completely healthy to begin with.
Yeah.
He came off injury, and I think the only reason why they brought him back from injury was because Varane got injured. And if Maguire and Varane are out, those are your two top center backs, and you're basically screwed. Because they gave it would have been Lindelof, and I don't even know who else they would have played back there, to be completely honest with you. Because they sent it probably would have been Lindelof and Bailly. Do you want Lindelof and Bailly out there as your two center backs? Not a chance.
I'd rather have Sorinchu and Johnny Evans. It's true. I would.
There's no need to do it like that. But yeah, it was just, it wasn't great from United. They have a difficult schedule coming up. They have to play Atalanta twice. They have City coming up. They have Liverpool this Sunday. It's not going to be fun if you're a Manchester United fan, myself included. It's just, you're not going to want to watch these games. And if you do, they better play to the best of their ability because their back line is lacking right now. They barely have a defensive midfielder that they can play in front of that back line that helps them out at all. Matic played. He was okay at best, but he wasn't great. I still don't even understand why Ole plays Matic. And Ole is a completely other story right now because players are fed up with him. I think they want him out. All the fans want him out. There's managers on the block right now like Conte and Zinedine Zidane that can come into the squad, take over the squad. It was Pogba who said in an interview that the team lacked any sort of creativity and they lacked a game plan. And if you're a manager coming into a game against a side like Leicester, who isn't doing great this year, but they have a great, they have a good team still. The team's not awful.
You can't sleep on them.
You can't go in there with no game plan and just go, guys, go out there, have fun, score some goals, defend a little bit, and that's it. You got to go out there with a game plan. That's what Leicester did. Leicester came out with a game plan. Stop Ronaldo, which they did fantastically. And just counterattack Manchester United. Those are the only two things. And pressure that back line because that back line is going to make mistakes. They came with the game plan. They executed it phenomenally. And they ended up winning this game.
Yeah, Daniel, I think Iheanacho was fantastic in this one. He really helped lead the line with Jamie Vardy. And then obviously Patson Daka came on and made an impact. It's just, going back to United, it's just poor performance after poor performance. There's no heart in this team right now. Daniel, January comes, I'm doing two things. I'm signing one, a CDM or a center midfielder box to box. Preferably, I have two guys on the list. I think that we mentioned last episode, Julian Tuchinemi would be a good one. Yeah. If not, I would go buy an even better player, in my opinion, Renato Sanchez. I think he'd be an amazing box to box player that would bring an intensity to that midfield. He would link up well with Bruno. He knows him very well. I think he'd compliment Pogba tremendously. And then number two, I would get rid of Ole. I would get rid of him. I think that he lacks technical creativity. I think that, you know, he just puts an 11 together and it's like, go play. And if players are coming out and saying that we didn't have a game plan, what does that tell you, right? Mm-hmm. But who knows with Paul Pogba, right? Who knows with him? But as much as I love Paul Pogba, but who knows?
Another nice haircut,
but no impact in the game. Anyways, that's what I would do to come January, Daniel. These are hard decisions. He's a club former player, and everyone loves him for that reason. But he his time's up at United. They need someone that could go manage egos and put together some structure there. Because they look like they're lacking it right now.
I completely agree. Moving on to our third and final game of the week, we got Newcastle versus Tottenham. Andrew, you want to discuss a little bit about this one?
Yeah, this was a banger game, Daniel. Callum Wilson, second minute early on, he put the Magpies up. And this is a huge goal for the club. They're facing relegation. There's a lot of internal problems with the managing, with the manager and the staff. Obviously, after this new takeover, there's going to be a lot of pressure for results, high expectations now. And it was a lovely finish by Wilson. Nice, neat header. Got some power on it. Put him up against the Spurs. I was pretty surprised. Then later on, it was a goal from Ndombele. Neat finish. Lovely strike. Top bins. No chance for the keeper. So that was the equalizer there. Then Harry Kane finally got his first goal of the season off a Heung-min Son assist to put them up 2-1. Jonjo Shelvey, the man, the myth, the legend, gets subbed on in the 63rd, I believe, and then in the 80th, he was off with two yellows. So he got a red card there.
See you later.
But before that, just before the half, Heung-min Son got a goal for himself. Lovely goal. Well worked. Balls moved around quickly. Found Heung-min Son and he netted it. Pretty much in on goal alone. Lovely finish. That was because there was 7 minutes of added time. Interesting events in this one, Daniel. There was an emergency in the stands. I was pretty shocked to watch this game. My heart was racing. It was pretty intense. It was tremendous work by Sergio Reguilón to stop the game. He got the referee to stop the game, realizing that fans were calling his attention to the stands because there's a medical emergency. It was cardiac arrest, which was reported in the news. So the game was stopped for quite some time. So they gave 7 minutes. The players had to actually leave the field for a little bit and then go do warm-ups again once they came back out. But the game was stopped because they had to attend to a fan in the stands. The fan ended up being okay. They ended up stabilizing the fan and getting that fan to hospital. I haven't heard much since then, since the weekend about the fan. Maybe we'll get some more news eventually. But it was just like your heart stops because like you don't know what's going on. And it was a very scary moment. But it was credit to the players for stopping the game. Eric Dyer was also involved in getting bringing awareness to the medical staff. And the medical staff actually got a defibrillator over there to the stands, which was good. I heard also stories of doctors, fans that were doctors and helping out and responding right away. So that was just, this is what football's all about. It's always, you know, great to see goals and assists and stuff like that, whatever the regular nuances of the game. But for fans to come together and really show their support, there's a standing ovation, just really moves you watching it. You get really emotional watching those sorts of things. It was just brilliant to see. And then the game obviously ended up finishing 3-2, own goal from Eric Dyer later on in the game. But the real storyline there was the fans and you know, the sense of fellowship there with the footballers on the pitch, obviously raising awareness for the situation and handling it very well, handling it very professionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to shout out Sergio Reguilón and even Eric Dyer. For Reguilón to notice what's going on in the stands is incredible, and then to alert the referee to stop the game because there's somebody in dire need of medical attention is incredible. And then for Dyer to understand the situation and ask the medical teams to grab a defibrillator and go help out, again, it's just incredible from both these two players. It does show how much of a community the football world is. They realize that somebody having a heart attack is more important than the game itself. Life and your health is way more important than you just on a football field playing your heart out. I love this from the players. I can't, like, I'm lost for words because, like, it's such an important moment. It's somebody's life at stake. And for them to go and pause this game that they're very heated in, it's obviously very close at this point with it just being 2-1. It's great to see from the players.
Yeah, I was impressed. Daniel, I'll say it again. Very impressed. You know, that's leadership on the field. Those are the players you want in your team, right? Guys like Dyer, guys like Reguilón, those are guys that you know, always put forth their best and lead by example. So top players there. Daniel, we're gonna continue with Newcastle here. We're gonna talk about the Steve Bruce situation. We have breaking news today. We're hearing it on the Wednesday, episode's going on the Thursday again. But Daniel, why don't you fill us in with the Steve Bruce situation there?
Steve Bruce has officially mutually parted ways with Newcastle this morning. He decided that he knows where they're sitting in 19th. He knows that new owners are coming in. And I think even as fans, like we talked about it last week, everyone could see this coming, where they're on the standings, the situation that they're now in financially. They feel like he's not the man for this job, especially with all this money coming in. And again, just where they're sitting in the stands. One tweet that I want to read to you guys was from Alain Saint-Maximin, his Steve Bruce's left winger, striker, cam. He tweeted this morning, "You are, without a doubt, one of the most gentle people I have ever met in the world of football. You have been a man of your word, a caring man, and a fair man who has never hesitated to protect us. I will never forget how you treated me. For that, I will forever be grateful." This is class from Alain Saint-Maximin, and it shows just how much Steve Bruce had an impact on his players. They might not have been the best team, just player-wise or in the standings, but he was a kind, gentle, caring manager who cared for his players more than anything else. And I think it shows just from Alan St. Maximin tweeting this. To move on to who could potentially be coaches of this team. The top runners right now are Conte, we discussed, Gerard, we discussed, Unai Emery coming from Villarreal. Obviously, they won.
I haven't heard about that one.
They won Europa League last year. And now even Rooney is being
asked
for the job.
I didn't hear about Rooney or Unai Emery, but I heard about Andre Villas-Boas being in the mix, the former Tottenham manager back in the day. So I heard about names like that, and like obviously the Conte and I didn't hear about Zidane, but I heard about Lampard.
I don't think Zidane is going to take this job.
This is a project that requires it's a long-term project. This is not going to be an overnight success here at Newcastle. They still have to fight relegation and make sure that they don't get relegated, because imagine, Daniel, new owners come in and the season that they come in, they're getting relegated because
relegated,
such a poor start and weren't able to bring in the personnel in time. So it's going to be interesting. It's definitely going to be interesting. I feel bad for Steve Bruce as a person in terms of, it must be hard. There's a lot of criticism. And, I think that they wanted to get rid of him to start fresh too. But the results haven't been there, Daniel. And is that his fault? It's probably a little bit of his fault. It's probably a little bit of his players' fault, right? This day they started well, but they ended up letting it slip, and that's because Tottenham's attacking duo there was too much for them. So they gotta figure things out, but it's gonna take some time. It's gonna take a lot of time, and it's gonna take a lot of chemistry building, especially with the new coach and new. There's definitely gonna be new personnel coming in, new player personnel. So it's gonna be a lot of moving parts that they're gonna have to manage.
The thing with all these managers that we've mentioned is that these managers are all, I wouldn't say top, some of them are top managers, but they've all proved that they can win.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the main things. If you can show to higher-ups that you can win, they'll want you on your side, especially if you're Newcastle with all this money coming in. I still think I'm still going to stick with Conte as the best man for this job. He proved he can do it with Inter, with no money coming in. Imagine what he can do now. Yeah. But they've all done it for their respective clubs. The real question is, can these managers do it for Newcastle?
And I think Conte can. Yeah, I think Conte can. He averages 2 points a game. That's a pretty decent number there. Most managers are lower than that. And then Villas-Boas is at 1.8, just to give you a reference point there. He wins 1.8 points per match. But Conte, like you said, has proven himself. He's proven himself in the Italian league, the Serie A, and he's done it with the against the odds, against the Juventus team that's won in year in, year out. And then he's also done it in the Premier League. He's done it with Chelsea before. He's been in that environment. He's been in the league. So he's familiar with this landscape. And I think he's definitely the top manager for this job. He brings a fire, brings a passion, and he also brings a tactical mindset that I really admire. It's something that many coaches can't match. And his defensive tactics as well as his counter tactics are amazing. He showed it last year with Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez. So you've seen it there already. So he's definitely the right man for the job. And I hope we see him as the new manager.
So I completely agree. I want to see him there because I think he'll do a great job. And I think there's nobody else better for the job. I think Rooney might be cool just because Manchester United fan, seeing him coming in, obviously Derby County is way different than the Premier League, but Rooney would be cool to see. Come on. Melo shaking his head for those of you that are watching on YouTube.
Daniel, that wraps up this episode. That's episode 4 of season 3. We're going to call this one Adios, Steve Bruce.
It's Steve Bruce out.
I wanted the Adios, Steve Bruce as the title name. We'll see.
He loves Adios, Steve Bruce. Anyways, guys, thank you again for listening. We're available, as always, on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you want to listen, we are there for you.
Yeah, check us out on social, Steve Premier Talk Podcast on Instagram. We love to hear your feedback. Support us there. Give us a follow if you haven't already. Daniel, that's it. Another episode done. Another one in the books. Episode's going to be out on Thursdays, every Thursday. We'll see you guys next time.
See you later.
We might see United in the Europa League this year, depending on how the results go.
You gotta end it like that.
I have to throw some shade. All right. Ciao, guys. See you guys. Take care.
See you later.